All of the Fretboard Journal podcasts are brought to you by a few presenting sponsors. First up is Marden Guitars. Marden Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Then we have Carter Vintage Guitars over in Nashville, where guitar lovers go for a good time. And we have a brand new presenting sponsor, Calton Cases. Your custom instrument deserves a custom case. Thank you to all of our presenting sponsors. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have a ton of big news for you. I hope you are excited as I am to hear that the new Fretboard Journal's 47th issue is mailing to everybody now, finally. You know, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of just how delightful it is to be a print publisher in 2021, because I love my job and I love producing the world's coolest guitar magazine. But needless to say, our printer, who we still love, printed an entire run of Fretboard Journal covers that had a very glaring printing mistake on them, something that could not be corrected after they were printed. So we asked for them to reprint everything, and they did, and it looks better than ever, and they are now all mailing out. They are in the safe hands of our mailing house. We have a bunch of copies, and if you want to get your copy and haven't subscribed yet, go to fretboardjournal.com, click on that subscribe tab. We have both the digital edition, which is going to mail to everyone in about 36 hours, and we have the print edition, which goes out via the USPS, or if you are abroad, via mail service. And you will get that as soon as humanly possible. But for all of you loyal subscribers out there who've been with us for the long haul, your copies are en route to you right now in the mail. No need to go camp out next to your mailbox, but you will be seeing it in its cardboard protective mailer from our friends at Calton Cases, teaser for this week's podcast, in just a week or so. Speaking of Calton, James Taylor is on the cover of that 47th issue, and there is a Calton in the background. And just to go full circle and tie it all together, today is the conclusion to our two-part Calton case episode. We talked to Keith Calton a couple weeks ago, the incredible inventor of Calton cases and founder of the company. The company has changed hands since Keith's original ownership. It is now in the safe hands of Jeff Poss down in Austin, Texas, and this was recorded before the big Austin, Texas freeze, so we didn't talk about the weather that much, but Jeff is an incredible entrepreneur, and he has transformed the company. The cases look better than they ever have, and he's also just an incredible guy. There's a little bit of an audio glitch throughout this podcast a little bit. Jeff was driving around, and the fidelity is not quite where we usually have it. But the content was so cool, I wanted to share it with you. So beyond the new issue mailing, which I'm super stoked on, and our 48th issue being well underway behind the scenes here, it's going to go out in a couple of months, we have some new podcasts. We have the Truth About Recording and Mixing podcast, which just launched. We have our third episode of that up right now. You can go to fretboardjournal.com to see it or listen to it. We, of course, have Luthier on Luthier. We, of course, have the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast. And we have a couple of new podcasts headed your way. One is called Acoustic Voices. It is a collaboration that we are doing between the Fretboard Journal and Breedlove Guitars, where we dive deep into that brand's history and the people behind it and the people who are playing it. It is a fun and interesting way to partner with a brand, and we hope to be doing more of this in the future. And I encourage everybody to go check it out. It's the first episode is already on Apple Podcasts and our site, as well as the Breedlove site. And I interviewed Tom Bedell for that episode. Another podcast headed down the pike soon. John Tavius Willis, Grammy-nominated blues musician, is doing a new podcast for us called Diddy Wah Diddy. It's going to be launching in just about 2 weeks, so stay tuned for that. We have been working closely with him. He is interviewing all of his blues heroes who are still with us, and it is going to be so damn cool. Last but not least, we have some fun stuff on our website, including a new Catch of the Day feature with our friend Anthony Payne of Harvester Guitars, who was on this podcast way back when. So, check that out if you haven't yet. Fretboard Journal's podcast is sponsored by a few brands that we truly love, including Mono Cases. You can go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of gig bags and studio monitor stands and pedal board bags. Everything they do is so well built. Also, our friends at Folkway Music, Canada's finest guitar store. Mark at Folkway gets a ton of great Martins and Taylors and Collings, but he also happens to have a 1958 Guild T100 right now in stock that somebody should go nab. It is truly beautiful. And as I've said many times, Mark is one of the great acoustic guitar repair people in the world, not just in Canada. So if anyone out there has a rare vintage Martin or Gibson, do not hesitate to take it to him or send it to him. He will do you right. And last but not least, we are sponsored by Retrofret Vintage Guitars, and I have a quandary with Retrofret. They get amazing guitars literally every single day added to their website. They've got a Just Arrived tab that I am riveted to. And by the time I record every intro to this podcast, all the really cool ones that I love are on hold already. So let me just say, add that to your little bookmark list, the Retrofret Just Arrived page. Right now, in stock, as of this recording, they do have a Vega 04 flat top acoustic guitar from 1938 that looks incredible. They have a 58 Les Paul Special, and they also have on the budget end of the spectrum a Silvertone Model 1444 electric bass from 1965. And then there's all these other cool guitars that are still on their Just Arrived page that I would love to tell you about, but someone got there first. So what does that tell you? It tells you they price their guitars right, and two, they get really cool guitars. Those are our sponsors for today's podcast. Again, I'm talking to Jeff Poss, the owner of Carlton Cases in Austin, Texas, for this episode. I hope everybody checks out their stuff. These are the flight cases. I mean, there's literally one on the cover of the Fretboard Journal 47 that is owned by James Taylor. Every great musician I know who is touring the world or was pre-pandemic has one of these for their most coveted instruments. So the pandemic, there will be a finish line, and you will be traveling again, and maybe you'll need a protective Carlton case. Regardless, I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I cannot thank you enough for tuning in, for leaving us a review, and for sharing this podcast with your friends. So Jeff, I just got off the phone with Keith, and Keith Carlton, the namesake of the company you now run, and he played me a song, his COVID song that he just wrote. I'll let you have a little bit of time to tune up your guitar before we hear your song, but tell me your backstory, how you got into this, how you ended up owning Carlton Cases.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I started off doing museum exhibits and like building museum exhibits. This was 30, 40 years ago. Yeah, 30 plus years ago. And just kind of got my hands on every type of material and fabrication method. And I had gone to University of Houston for sculpture, and that's kind of what got me into like tinkering and making things. And so museum exhibits was where I really spent a lot of time, about 12, 15 years doing that. And then that kind of led into doing movie props. I drifted off to Austin and did a bunch of movies. Did work for Robert Rodriguez on like Spy Kids all the way through to the most recent stuff. And that was such a cool kind of incubation period for me, because all the museum stuff, there was this really, really tight inspection on every single detail of everything we made, because it had to be really accurate. Like, I was making models of giant squids and eyeballs and brains. I mean, just all kinds of crazy things. But, it's like really permanent and under close scrutiny. And then doing movie stuff was just really fast and loose, and big budgets, all kinds of craziness. So really got to make, everything from spaceships to crazy weapons, all kinds of stuff. And that's really where I fine-tuned my mold making, casting, craft in general. But I always worked with fiberglass, silicone, and mold, things like that for 30 plus years. that kind of got me prepped, at least, for this accounting world. And just a guy like me, I get calls every now and then from just people who know people who are looking for something to be made, like prototypes. And that's basically what happened. John Green had actually approached Keith and was in the process of buying the company. Keith and John Green's a great sales guy and certainly knows everything about guitars, knows Texas music plus every other alt music, and he was pretty connected here in Austin, so he really brought all this energy and spirit to Calvin. But he was looking for somebody that could make the case, and through a mutual friend, he found me. He called me up and he was like, "I hear you know how to do fiberglass," and I think I hung up on him. And then he called me back a couple more times, and I was like, "No. No, I don't." You know, it's like a guy with a pickup truck. You know, someone calls you, you don't know them, and they're like, "I hear you have a pickup truck," and you just got to hang up because you're like, they're going to want me to help them move, you know?
So, sure.
So the fiberglass call is one of those ones that I usually don't follow up on. But I finally gave in, and he walked into the shop, and I was between contracts, actually, doing museum contracts. So it was just me sweeping the shop, and he walked in with a six-pack and carrying one of Keith's cases. And a six pack later, had kind of already created a little bit of a friendship, and I was already growing fond of the cases, just in that short time, because they have such a distinct look. And I really identified with the aesthetics of the case itself, and that was kind of the beginning of it. Really,
it's incredible.
John and I made we made about 10 cases together. And we were just trying to figure out if we could work together and make something of it. And then by the time we finished 10 cases, we decided to go to NAMM that year and see what the general reaction was to having Calvin's back, out there on the market, because they had gone through some bumpy times. And, we did NAMM, came back from that, and we were off and running. I think that John and I together built the first 100 cases. And we're slowly building, a little team there in Austin.
Now, you lived in Austin, music, one of the great music capitals of the world. Were you a guitar person at all before he came over with the six pack and the guitar case?
No, not at all. And honestly, it's one of the things that's been really tough for me is I'm still not a guitar guy. And, I've been involved with Calvin now for 9 years, I believe, eight and a half, 9 years. And I finally gave in, and I would love to play guitar, of course, but, I haven't made the time to do it, to learn. But I just started taking lessons about 6 months ago from one of the guys in the shop, Ian. And that's been really fun, learning. And actually, I am surprised at how fun it really is. If I had known how much fun it was going to be, I really wish I had started years ago. But I'm a long, long way from being able to play anything in front of anybody.
A lot of us are. That's cool. Yeah. So then the next question I have is, Keith Calton, as he very matter-of-factly says, and I think it's even on your website, he came up with that original design 50 years ago almost. You're looking at it, without any emotional attachment, you're not even really into guitars when you first see a Calton case. Were there any refinements? Were there anything that your mindset gravitated towards of like, I think I could do this better? Or is that a design that's just going to last another 100 years?
Well, I did start looking at a lot of other guitar cases, and I realized, that it is distinct. It has some features in it that make it look like a Calton case. And certainly the stuff that Keith was adding right at the end of his run with it was the, he calls them catch surrounds, the bumpers that go around the latches. And then he designed those, modeled them, and spent quite a bit of time perfecting those, that design. And then he also came up with the design for the corners themselves, those bumpers. And he solved so many problems by the time he was handing it over to us, that I think we just really wanted to see you know, how they performed ourselves. Because, well, for myself, I didn't have enough experience with the case to know what was right or wrong with it. And it took a good couple of years before I felt like we had the right to start changing any details. And we have made, you know, a few changes. We took the whole line and redid them. Basically, we scanned all of Keith's original plugs and molds and then put them in 3D and refine them a little bit just to get them, like, you know, where they were supposed to be perfectly symmetrical. We made sure that they were. And the ones that weren't, you know, we kind of refined some of the curves and lines, but they basically stayed looking, you know, like the Calton. So we have what we call four generations of Calton now. And the first one is like Keith's untouched, you know, original Calton. We still make a few of those, like the mandocello and the banjos are his original cases. Almost everything else we've refined. And some of that was, like I say, symmetry refining or, refining the texture, because Keith would be the first. I mean, we had Keith and I've had so many conversations, and we hit it off right away because he's like a process and materials guy as well. And we just synced up on those conversations. And his point on like the way the case looked or the finishes was like, well, it doesn't matter what it looks like, it's strong. You know, that's doing his job. And we were like, okay, well, now we need to refine it a little bit, because we were coming back, you know, again, we were bringing Calton back from some tough times, and it was going to be scrutinized. We wanted it to be just, you know, a little bit better. So we cleaned it up a little bit. Those were called Gen 2, where we basically didn't make any major changes. We just cleaned up the case and fixed the texture. And then the Gen 3 stuff, we started to refine. We started to look at the engineering of the case and what made it strong. What were its flaws, you know, in engineering, you know, how does it perform? So we sent off 7 or 8 cases to a third-party testing facility, had them run all kinds of compression and puncture and drop, even fire tests, you know, pressure tests, temperature tests, just to look for any chink in the armor. And we started making changes based on that data that we got back. And some of that has to do with like including a little bit more arch in the lid, just like an arch top guitar, you know, or a violin. It's one of the things that makes it strong. So we've accentuated that a little bit. Some of the Gen 3 cases, and then we've increased what we call the beam, which runs down the neck of the guitar. We add a little bit of extra structure, the layup, the glass layup, and we found that like almost doubles the strength of the neck, which is where a lot of cases get run over, or, you know, they drop and they fall and hit that head. We don't want any flex there, you know. So yeah, we've been looking into updates, and we only have one Gen 4 case right now, and it's the MJ, and it's really pretty. And only one person has received that first case, and it's Benedetto.
Okay.
And we have him kind of test running our cases, and went and sat with him and drank half a bottle of bourbon and went over the case and looked for all the flaws in it. And we came back from that needing to do a little bit of redesign. So we have kind of like a Gen 4.1, and that one's so close to being done. Like literally we're laying out the first one right now that would be for production. And we're super excited to get that one out.
Nice.
When it comes out, it'll be, you know, if you go to our website, there's a little description of the generation of cases, and then there's, you know, kind of a blow up of like the anatomy of the case. And we may, when we get that one finished, we'll try to establish that through every product that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That same set of aesthetics and engineering. It's really fun, actually. I'm really surprised at how much there is to do, you know, with development and just continuing to refine it. And I was kind of surprised, you know, when we were taking on the company, that Keith was, you know, 30 plus years in, and he was adding things to the case, developing it. And he's got, you know, in his garage, he had a dozen prototypes and stuff, different ways to do seals, latches. And I thought, you know, why didn't he work this out 10 years ago? But I get it now that you're constantly, you know, thinking of new ways and new things to do to the case. And we really want to carry that spirit on. And I called Keith and talked to him about it. In fact, I got an email just yesterday, I think, from him, of him commenting on, you know, the beam, and that he hadn't seen what we had done on the electric yet. And, you know, we had a little conversation about that. So it's really awesome to have him as a resource to just, you know, reach back out to.
Yeah.
And he's very much like, do what you want. But I'm like, yeah, but what do you think? You know, because I wanted to, you know, they are Calvin cases. They're not Jeff Poss cases. You know, I want to carry on that legacy.
I had to laugh. One of the questions I asked him was, you know, how did he test these cases that he was building by hand, and did he throw them out of buildings or try to set them on fire? And he's like, there's no way I could ever do that. I build them one at a time. I couldn't afford to do that. And then I go onto your website and you've just posted a video of you throwing them out of the building and setting them on fire and the guitar still being fine. So I love it. Great minds think alike, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing that we always want to do, you know, and the only reason we were able to do that is because we had we had misbuilt some cases, so we had extra cases, and it's kind of like, well, okay, let's throw that one off the roof, you know. And it's fun when there's an extra case. We're like, okay, what can we do? Actually, you know, we were working on a video a couple months ago where we're taking cases and we strap them to the front of two trucks, and then we ram the trucks into each other, and we take a competitor's case. It's one of the cases. So to see how they perform, and of course. I was a little eager. I was driving one of the trucks, and I hit a little too hard, just destroyed both cases. So we're waiting for, we actually have kind of a thing where sometimes when people are calling in an order, because people can place orders online or they go through dealers or whatever, but often we get to talk to people and we ask them what are the cases they have. And sometimes if they have the right competitor's case, we're like, hey, do you want to do a trade? Because we need to do some more, like, you know, Destruction Derby videos. So we try to have fun.
Yeah. Walk me through the process, because we actually threw, and you know, the Fretboard Journal threw a pretty big party at your space in Austin. And I was impressed by how many workstations there were and just how big an operation it was. It was on par with, you know, some of these mid-sized guitar companies that we often talk to. Walk me through how a case actually gets built, because I think these require a little more hands-on. I mean, there's not a lot of computer work, right? It's like kind of more like going to an old tailor or something.
Absolutely, yeah. We have about 20 people on the floor building cases, and then there's about another 6 to 10 people behind the scenes doing, you know, sales and marketing, accounting, IT, social media, et cetera. But the 20 people on floor, that occupies about 12,000 square feet of space, because we have a little space between people and we have room to grow. And the only computer stuff that we do really is at the very beginning of, these are like tailor-made cases. We get this painful moment of a measurement form. So we ask for, you know, about 20 measurements off the guitar and then a tracing. If we don't have that template already, if we haven't made one yet. And you know what's amazing is we still get like 4 or 5 new templates every week. It's crazy that they're still coming in like that. We have about 1,500 templates on the floor right now. And I think that we probably will keep getting, you know, 4 or 5 new requests every week until we hit about 3,500 templates. That's at least, you know, the research that I've done to figure out, like, when is this going to stop, you know? But so we have these molds that we've made, and they're open mold, fiberglass molds. They kind of have this, like, classic red tomato color. You know, everybody's probably seen an old Porsche or something that color. It's an old gel coat. So we have these open molds, and we spray the gel coat color into those open molds. That's a fiberglass gel coat. We can make both out of it. And then we hand lay the fiberglass in. We add a layer of like this kind of composite material that makes them lighter and stronger, rather than having to keep adding more and more layers of fiberglass. So they are lighter than they used to be. Like a lot of people have the old Canadian cases that Al Williams built, Alan Trudy. And Al passed away last year, if people aren't aware of that. And luckily I was able to see him right just maybe a month before that, which was really great. But Al helped quite a bit also through all these years. But anyway, Al had what he was making called a deluxe case, which had, I think, two extra layers of glass, fiberglass in it. They're quite a bit heavier, but that's what everybody wanted. Now we have the same strength, if not more, actually, because of the careful engineering, out of three layers of glass with this composite material added. So anyway, we hand lay all that, then we pop those molds out, the cast parts out of the mold. We trim them in a little cradle with a cutoff wheel, and then we go through hardware, and there's just a couple guys who are just drilling holes and put rivets in. They do all that without really any fixtures. They do a lot of it by eye. You know, we lay out the marks, and then they're just really trained well to get everything straight, even. And they kind of tune the case a little bit, you would say, to make sure that it's closing and fitting right at that point. You know, because you just slap it together, then they're not going to work right. And then it kind of goes to the interiors part. And there's usually about 8 hours of 8 hours on the case of interiors work. Then it goes to trim, and we kind of do a little final cleanup and trim inspection. And basically for that 8 hour period, the template is traveling with the case so that it gets checked.
And you, are you still getting your hands dirty? Are you still doing part of the actual build process?
I don't do much of the build. I mean, I do try to make the rounds every day. That's something Al Williams told me. He's like, you know, one of the most important things to do is go and, you know, go and say hi to everybody every day, you know, out there. So I am out on the floor a few times a day for sure. But I have a section off to the side where we're working on prototypes. So we're always in development of, you know, trying to fine-tune. Like, we're working on, like I said, the Gen 4, 4.1. But we're also doing a double Mando case, which will act as a double violin, double Mando, also a big gearbox. We're working on a prototype for Pedal Train, and this is like an old conversation that we had many years ago with them. They were going to release something called the Pedal Fly, and then kind of smaller board. And then it didn't happen, but we had already built, you know, that prototype mold. So there's probably 30 or more of those old pedal board cases that we made that are around. And just recently, we made some amps out of some of them, which was really cool. So we're kind of trying to figure out with that, you know, are we going to make pedal board cases? Pedal Train seems interested. We think it'd be pretty cool to have, like, you know, you got a Blue Sparkle Strat case, you might as well have a, you know, Blue Sparkle pedal board case to go with it.
Of course.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, or gearbox or whatever, yeah. And then we're working on, you know, out of nowhere, really, well, actually out of COVID, you know, we're working on these other partnerships. Huge partnership or collaboration that just came to fruition. It's super exciting.
I saw the Gibson announcement.
Yeah, man. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, congrats.
we're so excited about it. I mean, it's the kind of thing where this little, you know, this little case company, we've been making 800 to 1,000 cases a year for the past, you know, 7-8 years. And I think Al at his peak combined with Keith, they were doing maybe 1,000 a year, 800 to 1,000 a year. But, you know, you think like this little company's just never done more than that. And it's, we've struggled with trying to, you know, to try and grow, and we really need to grow a little bit. And yeah, it's a scary thing for a small company to approach one of the big guys and ask, you know, if there's something that we can do together. But man, it's just been, you know, because something like that can also destroy a company if you're not ready for it.
Sure.
And I think that we finally have felt like we tore this company apart over the last 24 months and looked at every single nut and bolt of how we were running it to see if there were, you know, there were efficiencies that we could put into place, or if there were changes that we needed to make in the cases. And what we found out is that there's no real changes that we could make that everything, anything that we could do would lower the quality of the case. That's just not what Calvin is. And we can't build a cheaper case because that's not what we do. And we build this high-end case. And a lot of people have come to us and said, oh, you need to make a $200 or $400 case, and you guys would kill it. But, I was talking to Tom at TKL, the owner of TKL, and he said, yeah, but there's already a bunch of people doing that. Like, why lessen the product and brand? So we've dug in hard, and I think out of this time, the Corona and COVID time, it's allowed us to make a lot of phone calls, reach out to a lot of the boutique shops, and just have normal conversations. Like Jim Olson used to use Calvin, and then he switched to another company for many years, and he's back using Calvin now. And that is just so cool because he is such a, he's a bookend in this industry.
Sure.
Certainly to boutique guitars. With enthusiasm, like, we have great conversations with him about how excited he is about the cases, and it's so cool for anybody to get excited about an accessory, which is what these cases are. But they have the staying power, and I think people appreciate it. So we have the confidence finally, I think, to reach out, and try to talk to Gibson, and luckily, we hooked up with the right person there, or the right few people there, and they thought it was a cool idea. We sent images over, and just a few months later, we're doing it.
I love it. Cool.
Gibson Signature Series case. Yeah, we've got this special color that we tried to match there. Like, how are we going to make a leather pink, leather exterior, pink interior looking case? It's something that would feel like a Gibson case. And we took their leather. Basically get a color match, but then you just get kind of a flat brown solid color. So we experimented with a few different things, and what we ended up loving was this copper dust, because we do a lot of metal flake stuff in our cases, but we use a super fine copper dust as the initial layer in front of the model, and it just gives the case this kind of glow and luster that it's obviously not like old worn leather, but it has a warmth that like leather does when it breaks in over time. So we think it's gonna like age really well, makes it stand out. It's different, different finish. And then they sent us some of their pink, their old pink interior, their vintage pink. And we sent that off and had it color matched with our fabric, our plush velvet maker overseas. So we matched that, and we matched the brown leather handle. We're doing the brass, and we've got these really cool. We have some vintage nameplates that go on the cases. Like the different instruments will get different nameplates in the cases. Like the Holly and Leaf is on one of them, and the Les Paul signature is on another one. It's really cool. It's been a lot of fun. Every single conversation with Gibson has been exciting and fun. And it's just, when you have that momentum and energy together, you're like, it's going to work out. And we're so excited that we got this together right for the holidays, too. So I hope everybody, we're proud of it.
Yeah, no, they look like the old, lifting style cases, and yet they're totally, as with everything you do, overbuilt and super cool. And Gibson, yeah, the new regime there is... they're all guitar people, which is what makes it fun. They are as geeky about this stuff as your customers are, and I am, and all the musicians out there. I'm curious. You mentioned it. I'd be an idiot if I didn't ask about it. These are cases that they're higher end. They're used by mostly touring musicians who want to protect their gear when they're on the road. Did the phone just stop ringing because people weren't touring for 2020?
Oh yeah, it was a ghost town. Yeah, it was really bad. We had a little decline in orders. Started in February, early February. And we were kind of like, we've laid out all the years of sales, like overlaid them on a grid, and there's just no predictability at all that we've seen in our sales. And, you know, it's just a jumbled line of, drawing of a bunch of different colors. We're like, how do we, anytime we have kind of a slow period, we're like, well, what was it like last year? And it kind of doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to affect the music industry. But for sure, we dropped down to, crickets. We were maybe getting 3 or 5 orders a week. And that was, that was pretty bad. And then they shut down, all the non-essential businesses in Austin back. I think it was March that they gave the official shutdown. And of course, we couldn't shut down. I mean, we did shut down our production completely, but our sales guys kept working from home. And then the R&D stuff, I was like, well, no one's here to distract me. So myself and 2 other guys, I got this amazing R&D guy. His name's David Russ. And he is... he's an angel. I don't know what I'd be doing without him. But he came in, he sculpts 3D models, he's just got just the right eye, and he understands that it's so great when you have someone with you that understands the difference between smooth and flat. Like whenever you're sanding and sculpting and stuff, he gets the curves, the eye, he has the eye for it. But we worked really well together and kind of pushed some of the prototype stuff forward. We were just kind of digging into that. And we were also going through a new version of getting the website rolled out. So we just marketing and social media, and we have an amazing design guy on our side, Holden Plack, who I brought with me. Thank goodness he was willing to come with me from the museum industry. And he does all of our art. And, all of the design work and all the Photoshop stuff. I mean, he's basically helped build the whole website, the design of the website. We got a local guy, Dylan Wagner, who rebuilt the website for us, and then Josh Jones, our marketing guru guy, has kind of spearheaded that. Jordan's guys are our social media girl. So it's just like we actually got a lot tighter as a team, and we had these very specific goals, like let's get the website rolled out sooner, and let's get some of this prototype pushed through. And then we fought hard to get the PPP loan, and thank goodness that came in mid-April.
Sure.
And by then we got the clear that we could start hiring people back in Austin right around mid to late, probably towards the end of April, like May 1st. And the PPP money didn't really allow for a full crew. It allowed for 75% of the crew, so we made a bunch of tough choices. And brought back the crew that we could, and we had about 50 cases back ordered by that time. But that was, 12 weeks of orders or something crazy, I don't know. So we just slowly started chipping away at that. Thank goodness we had those 50 orders. And then I guess, it just slowly has crept back up, and now we're at what would be normal sales, which is a little over 20 a week, and growing every week. And then, obviously we're hoping with this Gibson collaboration that jumps up some. And I think like a lot of businesses, they use this time to tighten the belt, think really hard about their business. And, it's not what we wanted to do, but it's what we did. And hunkered down and just made it better, I think. And I think we'll come out of this stronger. Stronger, smarter, faster,
bionic, all that stuff. You came at this sort of with no preconceived notions about the music biz, but I'm curious, there are a lot of cases out there for all sorts of different instruments. Is there an instrument that Kalten sells an inordinate amount of cases for that you just never thought the world would even care or need? Is there one instrument that you guys serve particularly well or is underserved by others?
I am surprised. Everybody would say the Dreadnought is the biggest seller.
Like, sure.
Probably across all companies, maybe all guitars or J45. But what we what we were surprised by was we sell, I think our second or third biggest seller is the mandolin. We sell more mandolin cases than almost other guitars, you know, put together, which is really surprising. But, you know, I know that Count has served certainly the folk community for a long time, and that they are really loyal to Count, which is so wonderful. But, yeah, I mean, we sell several hundred mandolin cases a year. And certainly Ellis, our close proximity to Ellis, friction with Ellis, has been a huge part of that, Ellis mandolin. And, you know, honestly, the old Count case was definitely a little bit small, and it got a little bit close to, you know, the F-style, to that horn on the body of the F-style. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there was some bad press out there, obviously accurate press, that occasionally a horn got broken. So Ellis wasn't buying any of our cases, and I couldn't understand why. And the guy that was running our CNC at the time, because we used the CNC to cut our initial shape on the plugs that we make all of, but then we can't work. We also use it to do our template. But anyway, his wife at the time was working at Ellis. So we were like, man, can you at least like get us in the door with Ellis so we can talk about it? And luckily, he invited us over. We spent some time, and he's like, well, it's just too small. I was like, well, if we make it bigger, will you buy me? He's like, yeah. How much bigger? And he said, make it an inch bigger right here. And I was like, okay, if we do that, we're good. And he's like, yeah. I've gone back and looked at it, and I think it's still too close. So we're making an F-style mandolin case, an A-style mandolin case. So the F-style will be 1 inch wider again. And you'll know it because it has kind of a flat, you know, a flat section right in, across the middle of it. Kind of at a glance, you can tell it's an inch wider. That's about to come out. The molds are all done, so I think we're releasing some smooth ones next week to Ellis. So that'll be cool. Hopefully that's well received. But you know, there's always this argument of the case is too heavy, like the first couple of years. But it's lighter than it used to be, and it's kind of like, well, those are the materials. Those are the strength. You know, you kind of need it.
Have you guys played with like Kevlar, carbon fiber, or all these sort of more space age materials? Is that ever going to be on the horizon? Yeah.
We have, you know, and I think that, again, we were really sensitive coming back into the market with what had happened while Calton was out. If Calton was kind of out for about 5 years, it had basically tanked. Between Al and John Green, there was another owner that just was shady and kind of ran it into the ground and fulfilled a bunch of orders. It was horrible, you know, and we still occasionally hear about one or two of those, and we fulfill those orders. But, you know, in that time, coffee cases really were born. I mean, they might have been around before that, but they really stepped in and took that slot that Calton had during that five-year absence. And I think that coffee makes beautiful carbon fiber cases, and we don't, you know, and we didn't really want to compete with that. We didn't see a reason to try to compete with it. And his cases are in a similar price bracket as ours, and you know, just felt like there's room enough for both of us. We didn't need to try to compete with it. I know that he's doing some solid color or some fiberglass cases now, but that's okay too, you know. We have experimented, you know, Dick Boak, who was with Martin for some years. So I met Dick Boak a little over a year ago. A friend of ours, Chris Stern, who is the second largest Calton owner, but he lives over in the UK. Chris Stern was in town buying some Calton, and he and Dick Boak were kind of friendly. So Chris and I went up to visit Dick and hung out with him. It was right after he had retired from Martin. And after two or three bottles of sake, you know, we got into the debate about carbon fiber. And Dick was like, you know, you really just, you know, you just got to do it. You need to do it because your case is too heavy. So just recently, maybe 6 months ago, I reached out to Nick. I was like, hey, you think we can get an endorsement, you know, like a quote from you about Calvin Casey? And he's like, nope, not until you do a carbon fiber blend. And I was like, ah, damn it. So I ordered carbon fiber, but I haven't done the case yet. I'm going to make one case for Dick. I'm going to send it to him to get that quote from him. And then we'll see what happens after that. You know, it's not going to take, it's really not going to take much weight out. Like, I think Hoffy's cases are maybe 2 pounds lighter, you know. And I really feel like fiberglass is the right choice because fiberglass is impact resistant. It was designed to take impact, and it basically distributes the shock of that impact through the entire structure, through the entire fiberglass structure. So it'll take that sound wave and just turn that impact wave and soften the blow, basically.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, all those old canoes out there, they're able to run across rocks and get repaired and stuff for all fiberglass. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we've all seen carbon fiber race cars, you know, just shatter into a million pieces when they have a wreck. And that's basically, you know, epoxy is a lot harder. The material that you use to lay up the case with, epoxy is a lot harder than fiberglass, which is actually, it's more brittle, too, you know. So when you get, you know, you can hit a carbon fiber case with a ball peen hammer not very hard, and you get a shatter. You know, you get a spider web shatter. And then that's just going to keep growing and growing over time. And you know, you've seen what we do to our cases in our videos. Like, you know, you can HVAC pretty hard. They take, you know, the engineering test, we did a crush test, and it takes 1,200 pounds before you get the catastrophic fail point. It starts to crack and flex a little bit, you know, earlier than that, obviously, but it doesn't collapse, you know, until you hit about the 1,200-pound mark.
Incredible.
So carbon is strong, no doubt, and I don't want to talk bad about carbon because it's a great choice for a lot of things. And if you want a black carbon fiber sexy case, then that's, you know, that's what you get. You know, that's what you should buy.
Yeah.
But if you want anything else, I think that we have an amazing value for the product that we build. I mean, a good price for the product we build, especially given the time that we spend making them, you know, all by hand and, you know, all the inspection points, and we really do care about every case. It's not an assembly line feel, you know, when we're building them.
Yeah. If going to carbon fiber, even for this one-off thing, is only going to save you a couple pounds, have you thought, I'm guessing the padding, the internal stuff is where all the weight is. Are there any technological things going on that might make for a equally crush resistant, but lighter case on the interior front?
We can do other things in the interior, but again, it's a compromise on quality.
Yeah.
Like we use a soft upholstery foam, and we did a bunch of research. We did a bunch of research a couple of years ago when we were tearing everything apart, trying to figure out, can we make these cases more efficiently, a little cheaper. And we ended up, you know, we tried a bunch of foams and stuff, and we didn't like any of them. You know, so we're just still using our upholstery foam, which is good for, you know, that it has an insulating quality built into it, and it obviously is, you know, very impact resistant, softens the blow of a drop, you know, a big fall or drop. The same goes with, you know, the glues. Like, most of the glues we use are not solvent based. There used to be more solvent glues in our case, but they were, you know, they can be a little bit sticky, so we've got mostly water-based glues. And then obviously the velvet, plush velvet, it's 100% cotton, it doesn't stain, doesn't leach out or anything. And that is the same material that Keith's been using for 30 plus years. We honor that because that's what it needs to be as well. You know, and we've looked at every other fabric, and we've looked for other suppliers of, you know, something that was 99% like what we use, and we haven't been able to find anything anywhere. So we just have to keep getting it overseas from this old company that does it, big concrete vats, you know, and lays it all out, dries it, you know, the old method.
Yeah.
So we, you know, there's one thing that we are trying to do to improve the whole system, and that is the trim and the hardware. Like, even the trim that goes around the case, that's a custom extrusion that Keith designed. Like, he drew it out, made the dies, had the, you know, had some, you know, 100 feet of the trim made, tried it, and modified it until he got it exactly the way he wanted it. And it's a really deep kind of tongue and groove. You know, you don't see that same deep tongue and groove on any other case because it's not cheap, you know?
Sure.
So, like those catch around bumpers. But we did just completely redesign our latches and catch surrounds to make them basically what they call it, valence spanning. So if you look at our cases now, we have to go in and we cut out with a razor blade, you know, some snips. We cut out around those latches by hand, and that's really tedious. It takes us about 2 hours to just put the trim on a case at the end of the whole build. So, but it also, we see that as a, probably the last Achilles heel in the case. It's a place where temperature can be exchanged or moisture can be exchanged. And it also, it's just a little bit offensive to look at to me when we open the case and there's these kind of, I call them like these, like, looks like somebody's tooth got knocked out, you know, where it's notched around the case. Everybody, I mean, no one else really seems to think it any kind of, you know, a deal breaker, but obviously it would make the case better if we didn't have to do that. And that will shave maybe an hour off the build, and it'll make the case stronger, and it'll hold humidity even better, so that's an improvement that we're working on. But, you know, that's probably another 12 to 16 weeks out because we're waiting on the prototype pieces to come back from the shop. And, you know, everything's this long process.
Sounds like,
yeah.
You
think of something, and then you're like, oh, man, that's a great idea. Let's go try and do it. And then 6 months later, you have a version of it. It's kind of like, and that's with us moving pretty fast. We do almost all, like, we try to control every part of it in the shop. But, you know, even with that, it's just hard to make progress on every single project every day.
Sure.
I know that there's a dozen luthiers out there. They're like, yep. You know, more than a dozen, they're like, yep. They've got the idea, and they're like, I want to change the way the saddle is. And then it's like taking them 2 years to get to it.
Sure.
We're working on a case for Klein & Kaufman right now, for a Klein case, because they used to use Calvin. And, I'm gonna apologize on air right now, but it's still not done, but we work on a little bit every day, certainly every week. You know, I was looking at it yesterday, working on it, and we're just trying to get it just right, you know, because the client, it has this big lower bout, you know, this big round lower bout. We're just trying to make the case, you know, look balanced to the instrument that it goes in. Like, to me, it's really offensive. Like, when you open up a case and the spacing around it's really nice, except for, like, in one spot, there's a big, you know, big gap or big chunky, you know, 4 inches of foam or something. Well, it's just, it fits in the case, but it's really not a case for that instrument, you know, and it's just nicer when it's balanced, symmetrical.
Well, I certainly miss seeing the endless parade of Kalten cases coming through the Fretboard Journal from touring artists who would come to do podcasts or videos with us. What else can we look forward to? Any more partnerships going forward? Are there? I mean, Gibson's obviously a whale of a company, but are you doing more of those?
You know, I don't know. I think this has gone so well with Gibson, and I think it's been so much fun. And shout out to Taylor Berryman and Herb Jenkins for all the hand-holding and support through, you know, getting this out. It has been really fun, and I hope that there's more that we can do with them. We may do some, like, artist series, you know, so, like, specifically designed finishes to go with, you know, artist series instruments. That would be really cool. We've talked maybe about doing something like that. In a sense, just this collaboration gets done because we work with luthiers to give them exactly what they want, and we're not satisfied. So we have, you know, we work with 100 boutique builders right now, It's just, you know, different volumes. So I think we take on every single one of those projects also with the same care. You know, again, like Jim Olson, you know, he's doing 50 instruments a year, which is amazing that he's doing that many a year. But, you know, Ryan Guitars, that's an awesome collaboration, really, that we have. They came to us. They started growing, you know, and growing and growing. And I think they're on track to do like 80 instruments this year, maybe more, which is awesome. And yeah. Every single one of them going out in Fountain. And they, you know, they're proud of that. And that is, I mean, I can't say how appreciative we are of Ryan Guitars for stuff like that. And there's a dozen others, you know, Sky Top, Lame Horse, you know, I mean, these guys that are Benedetto, of course, Bourgeois doing our cases again now, which is so cool. I mean, it's great. I mean, Callings, of course, huge, huge thanks to Steve Curry over there at Callings, because honestly, Kelton wouldn't be here and wouldn't have been able to restart without Steve's help. He and John spent a lot of time together at the beginning, and he really nurtured the initial dealer list and did a lot of reintroductions. You know, it basically stepped up and spoke for on Count's behalf a little bit, I think, to a lot of the dealers to kind of get us back in the door. And so it's every time I see a Callings order come through, I say a little thank you in my mind. We would love to do, you know, collaboration. I mean, every case that goes out is a custom case. Like, we don't do a standard case.
Yeah.
But the idea of doing, you know, 50 of the same finished combination it's not normal to us, but it's really cool when it happens, because it gives me a different way of thinking about how we do our production. Or, you know, like we were having a meeting with our team just this week, like, okay, everybody, don't freak out, but there's going to be 50 brown cases coming through, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, what? You know, how do we do that? And it sounds funny, but, you know, we're just so used to seeing different combinations out there. And, you know, we brought back we weren't doing a smooth case for a long time because it scratches too easy, but then we brought back that glitter that we were doing in our textured cases, and it got to be so popular that we started doing them in smooth. Like, we won't do smooth in any color, solid color, but we'll do glitter because it hides scratches and wear and tear pretty well. But, man, we've been getting so many beautiful case combinations coming through lately. Like, it looks so good. Like a purple sparkle with a purple interior. I mean, man, it's just stunning. And that's what's fun for me, and I think everybody that works at Calvin is like, we still love the product. You know, we still walk through and you're like, oh man, that looks great. Stop. Let's take a picture. Let's put it up, a photo, you know, and put it on social media just because it's a cool looking combo. So yeah, lots of fun. But I don't know who the next collaboration will be with, but I hope that we just keep everybody happy, you know.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you, Jason. Man, I'm super honored. I got to say, I was, you know, really nervous about talking to you guys that you might actually, you know, make me talk. But I'm so proud of Cal, you know, and I'm so proud of Keith, and I'm so honored that we are carrying this, you know, company on. And I really appreciate you guys, you know, recognizing us at all.
Oh, of course. No, we
taking the time.
Yeah, you're keeping our favorite musicians on the road when they can be, so we love it.
All right, that was my podcast with Jeff from Calton Cases. I hope you enjoyed it. We have so much fun stuff in store for you. I cannot thank you enough for your continued support. Keep sharing the podcast. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts if you haven't yet, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thanks again for tuning in.